Welcome to episode 47 of The Runner, and yes, it's the season review. Another 9 months in the life of Liverpool Football Club has come and gone, and it's time to reflect on what we saw. The highs, lows, and four, count them four, matches against Southampton without scoring a goal. And joining me to do just that, two friends of the podcast. They are Henry Jackson, match reporter for This Is Anfield. All well, Henry?
All good, thanks, mate. Yeah, you're right.
Excellent, not too bad, thank you, not too bad. And writer for, among others, Bleach Report and also This Is Anfield, Carl Matchett. Carl, all good?
Lovely to have you back, thank you.
Excellent, yeah, good to have you back. It's been a while. So, excellent. We'll get into the season then. Before we do that, as usual, the opening question. So, summer is upon us, or soon to be upon us, and the time of year people go on holiday. So, I want to ask Henry and Carl, if you're organising a lad's holiday with three members of Liverpool's current squad, who would you take and where would you go? I'll start with you, Henry.
I'm quite nostalgic, so I think I'm going to go back to the first place where I had a lad's holiday after GCSEs, which was Newquay in a caravan. So I'm going to go back there and be a bit classy. And I'm going to take Henderson, which might be a bit of a surprise one, but he'd be very organised. He'd be a safe pair of hands, and it wouldn't fall apart with him there. I think Wijnaldum has to go just because he seems to be the nicest bloke on the planet, I think. But then if it got a little bit dull with those two, then I think I'd have to bring Firmino, just because he seems a little bit mental. And if we were hitting a bit of a brick wall, I think, he'd ensure that we did something a bit nuts at about 5 a.m. So, yeah, I nearly went with Moreno, but that, you know, there'd just be tears with him. It would be too much.
Yeah, I get the sense Bobby Firmino would end up in somebody else's caravan on at least one other night. He wouldn't be coming home with the rest of you. That good choices. Carl, your choices.
I don't know. I mean, Henry sounds a bit like a third film of Anchorman with those three going along. So, to be honest, even on holiday, I'm not really going to get away from the football. So I don't really care where we're going, but I'm going to take the lads to play Zorb football. For those of you who don't know that, it's where you have one of those big, massive blow up balloon things around your body and you still play football and just crash into everybody and everybody goes flying. I think that would be a lot of fun. I'm going to take Daniel Sturridge to show him that you can sort of get bashed about a bit and still be okay. And also, it would be interesting to see if we could get away with that during matches, if he does all right as well. Just to keep him fit and keep him scoring goals. That's one possibility. I'm going to take Emery Chan because I like winning, basically, and he will smash everybody all around the place. And I'm also going to take one of the coaching staff. So I'm going to take John Akterberg, and I'm finally going to get some answers over what the goalkeepers have been doing over the last decade or so.
Very good. That's an eclectic mix of people. Akterberg, Sturridge and Chan. Fantastic, yeah. I would just take one person. That's Alberto Moreno. I'll take him to Helmand Province, and I'd leave him there. That would be my holiday. That's probably a bit cruel, but I wouldn't take Alberto Moreno to Helmand Province at all before the complaints come in. Excellent, very good choices, guys. Right, let's get into Liverpool's 2016-2017 season then. So some basic facts and figures. Liverpool finished fourth with 76 points, which was an improvement of four places and 16 points in comparison to the 2015-2016 season. They reached the fourth round of the FA Cup, the semi-finals of the League Cup. Their top scorer was Philippe Coutinho with 14 goals. Come to you first, Carl. Simple question. Was it a successful season?
I think it was overall, because all we could really judge success on, I think, is improvements year on year. You can't control what the other teams do. You cannot control things during the season like injuries and so on. So as long as the team is getting better, is on an upward trajectory, then for me that's progress and that means success. It could be more successful. It's not the most success that we want to achieve, etc. But yeah, I think we're on the right track and that makes it a successful year in itself.
Indeed. Yeah, well, obviously the fourth was, I guess, was the target. We reached that. But Henry, as I sort of mentioned there, the cup competition was disappointing, in particular the FA Cup. Obviously went out to Wolves in the fourth round at Anfield, which we'll come on to later. Would you have swapped fourth for either of the domestic trophies?
No, definitely not. No, I think we've reached a stage in modern football where coming fourth is more important, I think, than invariably anyway, than winning the FA Cup or the League Cup. I think if you asked Arsenal fans, as much as I'm sure they loved Saturday's win over Chelsea, I think what would they prefer, that or fourth place and Champions League football again next year? I think they definitely take the latter. So no, for me, you know, the the domestic cups are a nice added bonus. It would be nice for us to, you know, we've obviously, I think it's only one trophy in the last decade now, which is pretty grim. So I do think we need to sort of end that run. But for me, you know, fourth is far more important. And, you know, that was always the aim over a cup competition, and we achieved that.
Yeah, well, I'll stick with you. Fourth was achieved with that 3-0 win against Middlesbrough on the last day of the season. For me, it was a really encouraging result because it was a must-win game at Anfield against a team who defend in numbers, which has often been Liverpool's Achilles heel. But they got the job done. I thought they played really well. They rose to the challenge. It was a bit nervous going into the end of that first half till Wijnaldum scored. But overall, certainly in comparison to last season with that, when you think about the Sevilla defeat in Basel, it was a positive way to end the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it was one of those. What I watched it with a fellow Liverpool fan at home, and it was pretty grim. We started pretty laid back watching it, and then the minutes ticked by, and we started turning to sort of anger as it went on. But there was always a feeling, I think, with this team, they're not perfect by any means, but under Klopp, they've got that knack a little bit more of scoring at the right time. We saw it with some ugly away wins in the latter part of the season. I think, you know, getting that goal right on half-time was a huge moment. I always felt, even though I'm a pessimist with Liverpool, I always felt that even if it took an 89th minute winner, we would get the job done. And I think they showed that resilience and dug deep when I think under other managers, someone like Rodgers, I think could easily see that of falling apart on the last day and drawing 0-0 or something like that. But I think it's huge, and it's quite a big sort of mental barrier cleared going into next season, because it just shows that they can dig deep in those big games, which, well, they certainly haven't done over the last, well, too often over the last sort of decade or so.
And Carl Henry saying he was confident there. I was at Anfield for the game, and I've got to say the stadium's getting really nervous going into half time. And obviously the score, we knew what the score was at Arsenal, we knew what the score was at Man City. My feeling is Wijnaldum's goal, if he hadn't scored when he did, he hadn't scored just before half time, Liverpool had gone in half time 0-0, come out 0-0, obviously for second half, the players perhaps would have known what the scores were at the Emirates and at Watford. Real nerves may have crept in. Do you feel the same, or do you, like Henry, were you pretty confident we would have got there one way or the other?
Well, to be honest, my biggest fear was that we would have conceded. I thought we were going to keep playing the same way, whatever the scoreline was, because that's what we had to do. We had to go and win that match. So whether we were a goal down or it was still 0-0 or whatever the story is, we would have just carried on with a lot of possession, trying to get shots away and all the rest of it. So it was important timing because, like you said, the crowd was getting so nervous, and it was just a big pressure release, I think. I was, like I say, more worried that we would concede even if we scored first ourselves. And like Henry says, that under Klopp, that is something that we've become accustomed to doing now. We've got that sort of bit more mental resilience than we had before. And it's not just that under another manager, we might not have won that game. Under all our recent managers, we've not been in the position to even worry about winning that game, is more the point. So I think that was a really, really big step forward for us. And especially pleasing was once we did get that first goal, not once, I don't think, did anybody think that we were going to go on and not win.
No, certainly not. No, once we scored, I was convinced we were going to win. Obviously, Coutinho's goal so soon after half-time as well pretty much sealed it. Excellent. Well, Liverpool, they're not in the Champions League necessarily. They're in the Champions League qualifiers, so they have to play one more two-legged game before they're actually in the group stages. Their possible opponents are Hoffenheim, CSK Moscow, Sporting Lisbon, Nice, Young Boys, Victoria Pleasant, Steaua Bucharest, Club Brugge, Istanbul BB, and then either PAOK or AEK Athens, or Panathinaikos from Greece. Carl, I'll stick with you. Tap into your massive knowledge of European football. Should we be worried about any of those teams?
Look, you remember back under Benitez, we got Standard Liège and we were supposed to walk that, and it took a last minute goal from Dirk Kuyt to go through. I can't remember if it was in the last minute of the game or the last minute of extra time.
It was late,
before
definitely, late, yeah.
So Delaney
played really well, didn't he, in that second? Wasn't it?
Yeah, he did.
If I'm not mistaken, yeah.
Last time he played well, anyway. but look, you can't just say that any of these sides are not going to be any good, or that we're not really going to face a challenge, because the prize on offer is so big. It's like a Derby Cup final, World Cup qualifier, last ditch thing all rolled into one for them. You know, a lot of these sides, the way that the seeding and the qualifiers are shaped now, they've got to beat a really good side to get into the Champions League, and they might not get that chance again next year. So they're going to be right on top of their game. You can bet that whoever we get drawn against is probably going to have, you know, extra pre-season games, or they're going to base their friendlies around trying to be as fit as possible for this match and all the rest of it. So, yeah, there are some teams there which are better than others. You know, you want to avoid probably the likes of Nice and Hoffenheim and CSKA Moscow, but they're all going to be difficult enough and we have to be on it to get through this.
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Henry, the games, they take place late August, don't they? So this, we'd have played some league games, which I think is probably a good thing. I'd be really nervous if these games were sort of in July before we had any rhythm. I think that's probably one benefit. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you don't want, a July game is pretty horrendous. That one really sort of gets the nerves going. If the league campaign hasn't got going and you've got new signings who have only sort of featured in pre-season, then that makes it worse. But I think at the end of the day, you know, I can't sort of admit to knowing loads about those other teams, but I think if you can't get past those teams over two legs, then you probably don't warrant a place in the group stages, sadly. And I think, you know, we should have enough quality unless, you know, there's always the chance, like Carl says, they can raise their game. You could get a terrible refereeing decision against you or something like that. But at the end of the day, I think they should have too much to get past whoever they come up against, really.
Yeah, certainly hope so. Well, let's go right back to the start of the season then, back to last summer and talk about Liverpool's transfer business. So they signed, going into the first game of the season, they had signed Sadio Mane for £34 million, Gini Wijnaldum, £25 million, Loris Karius, £4.7 million, Ragnar Klavan, £4.2 million, Joel Matip on a free. I think he'd actually come before the end of the season before, if I'm not mistaken, and Alex Manninger also on a free. I'll come back to you, Carl, on this one. Were you happy with that as a collection of signs going into the new season?
I was reasonably happy with it, but I did think it was lacking more and I wasn't expecting, the biggest two, Wijnaldum and Mane, to be elite, to be honest, especially Mane for the amount that we paid for him. I'd watched him a lot at Southampton. And I didn't expect that he was going to be as good as he was and certainly not as consistently important to the team as he was. So that was a big positive as the year went on. Overall, I think we did well. You know, we upgraded in areas that we needed to, not all of them. You know, there were two pretty specific ones that we didn't upgrade again, which we still needed to, which we still need to this summer. But yeah, I can't say I was like downhearted or anything after last summer.
Henry, I think we may have discussed this already, but I was massively underwhelmed by Sadio Mane's arrival. I remember a guy at work who's also a Liverpool fan. We both agreed it was the most underwhelming signing in our time supporting Liverpool. Obviously, we'll go on to this, but we were massively proven wrong. What was your instinctive feeling when Mane signed, given the fee as well, obviously £34 million, which is a pretty hefty amount?
Yeah, I wasn't as underwhelmed as you. I thought he was a good signing, but I think, as Carl mentioned, the fee was a bit of I wasn't too sure about his consistency. I'd heard a few Southampton fans I know sort of had complained a little bit about that consistency and his all-round attitude, and I worried a little bit about that. And then I found out that Klopp had wanted to sign him before during his Dortmund days, which sort of made me a bit more confident. I think it was just probably the fact that it was another player from Southampton and we'd signed so many that maybe made it feel a bit more underwhelming. We'd obviously attempted to go for Gertz of all accounts, who felt like the more, you know, high profile buy, and we hadn't got him. So sort of almost potentially at the time sounded sort of like sloppy seconds a bit. But I mean, he couldn't have proved me more wrong. He's probably proved me more wrong than most transfers Liverpool have made over the last 10 years. I think he's been actually outstanding.
Yeah, as I said, we will come on to Mane in a bit more detail shortly. But let's start then with the first game of the season. It was played on Sunday, 14th of August, and it was arguably the game of the season from a Liverpool point of view. Arsenal 3, Liverpool 4. Theo Walcott gave Arsenal lead, having missed a penalty on 31 minutes. Coutinho equalised with another goal just before half-time, a brilliant free kick. He then made it... Lallana made it 2-1. Coutinho made it 3-1 on 56 minutes. Liverpool were blistering. Mane then made it 4-1 on 63 minutes. Liverpool absolutely in control, playing some brilliant football. And then Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain got one back on 64 minutes. Callum Chambers got another one on 75 minutes. Liverpool hung on, though, for the win. Stick with you, Henry. Was this basic Liverpool season in microcosm? Absolutely brilliant going forward in spells, but so, so vulnerable at the back as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was that spell. I mean, I think it's easy to forget, for starters, that actually we were dreadful. I think in general, that first half, we were really poor. We were all over the place at the back. And I mean, Moreno took a lot of stick for obviously given the penalty away, and I think Walcott's goal, I think he was harshly treated for that, because I think the whole defence, and I think it was Henderson's first game in that sort of defensive midfield position, and he was all over the place, and yeah, that was shocking. And it was Coutinho's goal right on the stroke of half time that sort of changed things. But then, you know, there was that sort of 20-minute spell in the second half that was, for me, the best spell of football the whole season from them. And, you know, there were quite a few to choose from. It was just unbelievable, the quality of it. And there was a point at which I genuinely thought they were going to win 7-1. But then, yeah. in typical Liverpool style, you know, I think it was Chamberlain's goal, you know, straight after they'd made it 4-1, or very, very soon after.
It was a minute later. Yeah. I mean, Mane scored 63 and Chamberlain scored 63.
Yeah, and it gave him a sniff. And then obviously the goal made it 4-3. You feared them. I think I went from thinking we were going to win 7-1 to lose 5-4. Which does perfectly sum us up. But yeah. The only thing I would say, actually, a bit of praise for the team. I think in that final 10 minutes, when I was just terrified at what was going to happen, I think that was one of the first signs that they did actually, it feels like a long time ago now to remember it, but they did actually manage to kill the game quite well in the last sort of 10 minutes. And Arsenal didn't actually have a chance to equalise, I don't think. And they wasted a bit of time down in the corner. So I remember sort of feeling positive about that they sort of shown a bit of grittiness. But you're right, it just displayed everything good and bad about this team.
That's really interesting there, what Henry said about the best spell Liverpool have played. And I mean, in a way, it's a really valid point. And it's probably forgotten, Carl, because it was, you know, it was at the start of the season. There's obviously a lot of football after that. But yeah, that 20-minute spell after half-time, where, as I said, Lallana scored on 49, Coutinho scored on 56 minutes, and then Mane on 63. I mean, would you agree with that? It's a fair shout, isn't it? That was possibly peak Liverpool under Klopp, that 20-minute period after half-time at the Emirates.
Well, it'd definitely be up there. Yeah. I'm not sure it would be the very, very best, but it was indicative of how Liverpool play when they are at their best. You look at games like against Tottenham and that at home, which we'll probably talk about later on, but those spells in matches, and it's really, really hard, we should point out, to play that way for anything more than like half an hour or so at a time. But where we just flood everybody forward all at once, everybody's reacting at the same time. As soon as the ball wins, that's it. That's the trigger for everyone to push on. We've overloaded teams down the channels, and well, we had a few players who were really, really on top of their game. Wijnaldum was really good for a period in that match. Lallana, Sadio Mane came in. But as good as we were there, it was literally about 35 minutes of a very, very good performance, largely terrible either side of that, until that final 10 minutes. So, like I say, it's difficult to play full throttle like that for anything more than sort of half an hour at a time. If you can score four goals in that period, then you're probably all right. But I think we saw there very early on in the season, there were still other issues to fix as well.
Yes, and then, Liverpool followed that game up with a defeat, disappointingly, at Burnley a week later. They then beat Burton 5-0 in the League Cup. It was a game where I literally, for the first time in my entire Liverpool sporting life, didn't realise Liverpool were playing until that morning. It just completely passed me by somehow. But yeah, we did play Burton. We beat them comfortably 5-0. And then, Henry, 27th of August, another Saturday, Tottenham won, Liverpool won. Which in the context of what Tottenham went on to achieve that season, obviously undefeated at White Hart Lane, really it just becomes a better and better result as the season went on. James Milner gave us a lead with a penalty just before half-time. Danny Rose equalised with about 18 minutes to go. But we were excellent that day, arguably should have won. And was that the real sign? I know we'd beaten Arsenal, but that was a bit of a madcap game. Was this the real first real indication that we were going to be very, very good against the top six this season?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you're disappointed about drawing away to this Spurs side, to, you know, very, very strong team, I think that can only be a good thing. And it does feel like a long time ago now, so it's a slight blur, but I'm pretty sure we were robbed with a Mane goal to make it 2-0, I think, or maybe 2-1, which
yeah,
wasn't offside.
Yeah, it does ring a bell, actually. Yeah,
I remember us having enough chances to win that game about 62-0, so...
Yeah, yeah, so I remember feeling... a bit gutted with a point at White Hart Lane, which when, you know, the staggering home record this season that they've had, says all you need to know about how good we've been really against those top six.
Yeah, I mean, Carl, Liverpool didn't lose a single game against the top six, home or away this year, and include Everton, and obviously finished seventh. They beat them twice. I mean, why were Liverpool so good against the big boys this season?
Well, because we're really good. Is the answer. We are a good side. And when we play against other good sides, you know, you're on the same level as them. They're trying to win most of the time. We're trying to win as well. And we do have players who can make a difference in that kind of fixture. You know, everybody knows that we've struggled against teams who just don't care, just don't want to play, just want to stop us. So that's an issue to work on separately. But against sides who think that they're as good as Liverpool, or who Liverpool think that they're as good as and can compete with, we've shown that we can, not just technically, but on a tactical level. Physically, we've been able to match them when we've needed to. So there's not really just one reason, but when it happens again and again and again, and we just don't lose against them, you have to acknowledge Liverpool are a really good side. And Henry was just saying there about Tottenham's home record. They dropped 4 points all season, and two of those were against us on what was it, our third game of the season or something like that.
Yeah, third league game of season. Yeah,
yeah. The only other team they dropped points against at home was Leicester, which, all right, they weren't playing too well at the start of the season, but still defending champions and all the rest that goes with that. That shows you what a good result that was, and it could have been better for Liverpool as well. Like I said, we had loads of chances that game.
Oh yeah, Liverpool definitely should have won that game. Absolutely. Well, a week later, they beat Leicester 4-1 at Anfield. A fantastic performance. And then the following Friday, talking about Liverpool's record against the top six, came a fantastic game. Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2. Again, another result which the more the season goes on, the more sort of excellent it became given what Chelsea achieved. Friday night football, Henry. Let's talk about that just quickly. I remain not a fan of this. For me, my take on Friday night football is Friday's the day you get excited about football, not the day you actually play football. You offer a similar mindset?
Yeah, it didn't quite seem to work. I mean, I'm never one to sort of complain about there being more football on, really. But I think I'm the same as you. I am a bit of a traditionalist with it all. And I don't know, it didn't quite sit well with me. And I mean, obviously that night was great, the result, but I didn't get the same sort of rush that I would on whether it's a Saturday lunchtime, Sunday afternoon game. It didn't feel right. But I don't know if I'm wrong, but it seemed to just sort of die a bit of a death. I don't know whether it was not popular in terms of viewing figures, but sort of Sky, sort of showing about 3 or 4 on the spin, it seemed. They then sort of didn't show any until, I think it was the West Ham Spurs game, sort of last month or something. But maybe they felt it wasn't working either.
Yeah, well, interesting. I wrote an article about this I think it was the first Friday night game. Yeah, it was Southampton, Man United. Man United, Southampton was the first Friday night game. I wrote an article ahead of it. So I did some research into it. Basically, it was a brand new package created by the Premier League, which, you know, any TV company could bid for. Sky won the rights, and it was 10 games. It was meant to be 10 games, 10 Friday night games. Right. So our game against Chelsea was the second one, I believe. But yeah. I don't think there were 10 in total. As you said, it was an enormous gap after the turn of the year. And West Ham Tottenham was the first one in ages, I believe. I don't think there were 10 in the end. And I think, I don't think the viewing figures were good. I think the presentation was pretty shoddy with, you know, Jeff Stelling in his casuals.
Yeah.
And
oh, it was awful. Terrible.
Tubes doing whatever he was doing. So, I think they ditched it. But let's go back to that night at Stamford Bridge. I was fortunate enough to be there. It was a fantastic night. Chelsea won, Liverpool 2, as I said. Liverpool 2-0 up in 36 minutes. Dejan Lovren and then Jordan Henderson with a fantastic goal. Diego Costa got one back for Chelsea. But for me, Carl, I'll come on to you on this one. What really stood out about the game for me was how good the midfield played. It was the first sign that we had, for the first time really, you could argue since the Alonso, Mascherano, Gerrard days, a real high quality midfield. Obviously not on that level, but I thought Henderson, Wijnaldum and it was Lallana obviously were fantastic. And Henderson in particular I thought was great. For you, was that the night where he really, really established himself as you know, Liverpool's number six, that kind of deep line player? I mean, I thought he was excellent personally.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real team effort. We were strong, we were on the front foot and we were aggressive early on. And when we got the lead and we sat back a little bit and they started to come into the game, we showed good defensive ability as well. So I think it was pleasing all round. I think when Henderson's in that role, he does benefit from having players who are equally as energetic as him alongside and ahead, which wasn't always the case when the likes of, say, Gerrard in his latter years obviously didn't really have that ability to get around. So it's important for Liverpool in these big games, particularly, as we were saying before, that we do have lots of energy, that we do have lots of willingness to close down and make the challenges and that. Henderson needed a big game in a big game, I think, for people to really get behind that this was going to be his role. And he's probably going to need the same again now that he's had such a long absence, because people tend to forget, to be honest. But he was great in this match, as were most of the rest of the team. I think this was a really big result for us. And obviously it was for Chelsea as well, because they changed very, very soon afterwards.
Yeah, it was our and Arsenal's fault that Chelsea won the league, but never mind. Just sticking on Henderson, Henry, I know you're a big fan of his. You've written about him. You've written in defence of him. Carl mentioned it there. He has had a long layoff. He hasn't played since, I didn't realise it was this far back, the Tottenham game on the 11th of February. His injuries do seem a bit of a problem, don't they? I mean, he's a club captain. Sort of, can he? I mean, I just wonder, can he go into next season if he's not fully fit, remaining club captain? Because, well, he simply doesn't seem to be playing enough games.
Yes, it is definitely becoming a cause for concern, isn't it? I mean, he just can't seem to string together a whole season staying fit. And like you say, I'm a big fan of his. I think he's taken a lot of flack in his time at Liverpool, but I think he's just grown in stature and he's really been a huge loss, I think, through injury. But I think you're right. I mean, I think I'd probably judge next season if it goes the same way, you've really got to start thinking about certainly the change of captain. You know, it doesn't work. I think Arsenal had it with it. Arteta, I think, barely played because of injury. It doesn't work having a club captain on the sidelines the whole time. So I think I'd use sort of next season as key. If he keeps showing no signs of recovering from this constant sort of ongoing issue that he has, which, by the way, I'm sort of becoming more and more concerned that Ferguson was sort of right all along about him, which is annoying. I think you do have to start thinking about, you know, not only taking the captaincy but his long-term future, because it doesn't work. You've got to have a set team. It's so important having a set midfield, and he plays in such a key position that you need him available. You look at sort of players like Mascherano and Alonso, how often they were, you know, they were so dependable in terms of fitness, and he just seems to get a run of 20 games and then he seems to, you know, miss 2 months, and it's happening all too often. It's a real shame, because I think he's probably coming into his prime years were it not for injuries, but it's sort of threatening to, dare I say it, sort of going down a bit of a Sturridge route at the moment in terms of the amount of football he's starting to miss.
Yeah, well, I think there were pictures doing around today of him. He stayed back in Melbourne. I think he might have cancelled his holiday to get fit. So let's hope he's at least ready for the start of the season. So yeah, carrying on, Liverpool, I mean, their form just continues to be very good. They beat Derby comfortably 3-0 in the League Cup on Tuesday, 20th September, a few days after that Chelsea win. And then the following Saturday, they beat Hull 5-1, another blistering performance. Adam Lallana gave us the lead after 17 minutes. Mane made it 2-0 on 36. Milner then made it 3-0 with a penalty on 30 minutes. Second half, Coutinho on 52. Milner again, 5-0. In between, David Myler scored for Hull to make it 5-1. But Carl, it was a fantastic performance. And this was kind of I don't know if this is necessarily fair to say this because he'd been excellent all the way up until this, but this was kind of a day where I thought Sadio Mane really, really shone. I mean, overall, he scored 15 goals for Liverpool this season, which, if you remember, he obviously missed the last sort of 6 or 8 weeks because of the injury picked up against Everton. Yeah, it was around this time, wasn't it? And in this whole game particularly, Mane was starting to show he was going to be a deadly player for us, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he'd started really well. I think it was 13 he scored all told this season.
13, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, he had several standout matches, and I think this was one of the ones where you saw not just individually, but in the context of the team, the way that Klopp wanted the attack to work, he was a big part of that. Just the movement that he had, his direct running, his ability to get behind the defence when, you know, quite a lot of our attacking players want to come towards the ball, want to drop deep and find a bit of space, that sort of thing. So he's really important for stretch and play for Liverpool. And this was a game where we saw that completely as well. I know we've sort of moved on from that, but just touch on the Henderson and missing lots of minutes. Yeah. I do think it's a problem, but really only from Henderson's perspective. I mean, we look at the top six from this season. He was actually second out of the top six teams' first choice captain for minutes played in the Premier League this year.
Wow.
Yeah, Hugo Lloris played 3,000 minutes, and then it was Henderson, 2,100. But then it's Rooney, Kompany, Terry and Mertesacker, who all got very, very few minutes this season.
Oh, blimey. Captain jinx there, Yeah, no, I do agree, though. I don't know what your view, Carl, but I'm with Henry. I'm getting slightly worried on a long-term basis with Henry. We'll just go back to him briefly. Yeah, whether it's not just his captaincy that's in doubt. It's his future, isn't it, really? Because in such an important position, you need somebody who's playing regularly, don't you?
Well, you do. I mean, especially if he's meant to be the one who's holding the midfield together at the base, you want your spine of the team to play together as regularly as possible. What I will say is that prior to these last two seasons, he was a regular. And so, you know, his athleticism, his stamina has always been two of his biggest attributes. So there's no saying that he absolutely can't get back to that. But on the other hand, over the last two seasons, he has only played 50% of the minutes available to him. So the longer that goes on, the more of a problem it becomes. And like I said before, I think he'll probably need a couple of very big performances at the start of next season, not just to win his spot back, but to win the trust of the fans that he is still a first 11 player. You know, Klopp to obviously be turning to him more often than not, and for his teammates, obviously, that are going to try and keep the positions that they've won now.
Yeah. Well, moving on then from the Hull game on the 24th September, 5-1, Liverpool won again, away at Swansea, somewhat fortunately. They were 1-0 down at half-time, had appalling first half, and then got back through goals through Firmino and a late penalty from Milner. After that came the incredibly dull 0-0 draw with Manchester United on the 17th of October. There was then a 2-1 win against West Brom at Anfield, 2-1 win against Tottenham in the League Cup, a 4-2 win at Palace on the 29th of October. And then, Henry, 6th of November, Liverpool 6, Watford 1. Another fantastic performance. And what was particularly significant about this game was Liverpool went top, which I think was the first time that season. After that game, were you starting to think, or had you thought already, that we could genuinely win the title?
Yeah, I really did. And as someone who's, like I said, a pessimist when it comes to Liverpool, that's saying a lot, because there's not many times over the last 20 odd years of supporting them that I've thought that. You know, I at that point, I really thought they were the best team in the country, albeit, you know, they had defensive flaws. They didn't look perfect, but the way they were blowing teams away in attack with that, certainly that quartet of Lallana, Coutinho, Mane and Firmino, it was just special to watch, really. And you know, at that point as well, Chelsea hadn't decided to go on the most ridiculous run imaginable either, so you know, they didn't feel invincible by any means at that point. And no, you felt that there were flaws in the other rivals as well, so you know, they were flying so much then that I really did believe it was going to happen. I think probably, I don't know if we'll get onto it, but I think maybe I look back at Coutinho's injury against Sunderland when he, you know, we won the game, but he went off. I sort of see that as the point at which it just slowly started to change, when I think my mind started to realise maybe we might not, because I think the key was just keeping these key players fit the whole season. You know, it showed with Chelsea how important that is, and Leicester last season. And I think ultimately, we probably to win the league, we needed to keep certainly that attacking quartet fit, and they showed that day against Watford. You know, it was breathtaking, really.
Yeah, well, let's stay on that, because that Sunderland game, as you mentioned, came quite soon after. First of all, in between, on the 19th of November, there was a 0-0 draw at Southampton. Liverpool were brilliant on the day. They had again a ton of chances. I think, yeah, Klein's header was probably the most glaring of them, but they did play very well. Then on the 26th of November, Liverpool 2, Sunderland 0. Coutinho went off with an ankle injury, and I know you've mentioned this before on this podcast. I mean, at the time, obviously, it felt pretty serious, but it was a bit of a turning point as well, wasn't it? Because he was out for a long time.
Yeah, it was. It was just the way it affected the whole team. Yeah, and I don't want to sort of, I've had a bit of stick lately because I've given Origi a fair bit of criticism for some of his performances, and I know he's young, and so he deserves probably a bit of leeway, but I just think as soon as Coutinho went out of that team, and of course Origi scored the opener against Sunderland that day, but the attack just, it looked blunted and it just didn't look the same. And I think that was the issue, is that Coutinho getting injured, we didn't have a ready-made replacement. And yeah, for me, I sort of see that as the point at which things began to turn, and we needed everyone fit. And it just, yeah, there's a number of moments I look back on through different months, but that one's sort of a bit of a killer for me.
Philip Coutinho, he didn't come back. So that was the 26th of November. He didn't come back until
a couple of months, I think.
Well, yeah, it was Wednesday, 11th of January. It was the first leg of that League Cup semi-final against Southampton. So he was out for the best part of 2 months, and yeah, obviously a huge amount of time. And even then, he didn't really come back up to full sort of sharpness until right at the end of the season. But no, yeah, we'll come back onto him as well as we get on into the pod. But yeah, so Liverpool beat Sunderland. The form continued to be very good. They then beat Leeds in the League Cup the following Tuesday, when Ben Woodburn became the club's youngest ever goal scorer. 4th of December then was the infuriating 4-3 defeat at Bournemouth, when Liverpool were 3-1 up and just blew it. They then had a disappointing 2-2 draw at home to Anfield. Against West Ham at Anfield. And then they went on a very good run either side of Christmas, beat Middlesbrough 3-0 at the Riverside. And then the game I'll come back to for obvious reasons. But then there was a 4-1 win against Stoke on the 27th of December, a the 1-0 win against Man City on the final day 2016. On New Year's Eve, Saturday 31st December. But as I said, there was another game in that run. Come to you, Carl. Monday 19th December, Everton 0, Liverpool 1. Sadio Mane with the latest of winners possible. I mean, just every element of this game for me was just absolutely brilliant. The fact it was at Everton, the fact we deserved to win, we were brilliant. Certainly better than Everton. The fact the goal was late and the fact it was just before Christmas and we ruined their Christmas, didn't we? It was a great, great Monday night, that.
You be careful, they'll still start calling us the bitter soon. it was fantastic. And I think my favourite part of that goal was the fact that it was so close to the line. It was so close to the defenders and none of them could quite react quickly enough. It's a goal and that's it. That's done. There's no chance for, you know, a Jagielka 25-yard top corner nonsense or anything like that. It was great. It was achieved without Coutinho and, you know, we didn't necessarily, although we did play really, really well, I just didn't think at any point this one's going in, this one's going in. It just always seemed as if it was like a half chance or it wasn't quite clear cut enough for it to be a real quality chance that we were going to score. It just felt like one of those horrible derby games, basically. For it to finish in that way and right before Christmas, as you say, you can't really ask for much more than that from a derby match.
No. Henry, we're not going to talk about Daniel Sturridge on this podcast because I feel like we just do it too often. And I'm sure he's discussed endlessly on other forums. But just one mention of Sturridge I want to do in the context of this game. It was his shot which hit the post, which came back, that then gave Mane the chance to score. And it's kind of lost in it all. But I thought the shot showed how clever Sturridge was because it was a cross goal, if I'm not mistaken. He went across Stecklenburg and another striker may have sort of, you know, lashed at it or just tried to get their foot through it, but he really tried to place it and it was the cleverness of the shot for me which then led to the chance which Mane scored from. And in that moment Sturridge showed, okay, he doesn't stay on the pitch very often, but when he is, he's a clever centre forward, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think about that game, I think there was a few too many times that there were too many players not willing to take risks in the final third, and we looked a little bit one-dimensional. Everton sort of looked relatively comfortable, and it was such a frustrating game up until that Mane goal. And I think it just showed with Sturridge, he brings that something different. He scares the other team, and he was the one willing to take that risk. You know, I think he did a step over on the edge of the box and decided to take the shot on in the 93rd minute at Goodison, which, you know, I think that night there were quite a few who wouldn't have done that. And I think he's just got that arrogance about him and that confidence that he fully sort of believes in his own ability, and he was probably disappointed that it, you know, didn't nestle in the bottom corner, because for me, he is that good. But, you know, without that little cameo from him, we wouldn't have won. It's as simple as that. And I'm glad that he's taken a lot of flack and a lot of it very unfair. And I think it's great that for him personally, that he's finished the season so strongly with a couple of excellent cameos, and, you know, it gives Klopp a little bit of a headache now.
Indeed, you know, end of the season very strongly. So, as I said, beat Stoke 4-1, on the 27th of December, and then Man City big win on the 31st of December, which meant Liverpool ended 2016 in second. They're only 6 points behind Chelsea. Real sense of title was well and truly on at that stage. But then January happened. Let's go through this. This may well be the worst run of results in certainly my time supporting Liverpool. So it started not too bad with a 2-2 draw at Sunderland on the 2nd of January. I mean, it wasn't great. Liverpool led twice and then conceded twice.
That's an awful result.
Well, in the context of four straight wins, I would suggest it's not too bad, given they were probably knackered as well, having played, I think it was like less than 24 hours, wasn't it, after the City game. But then, still with you, Carl, it fell apart here. Liverpool drew with Plymouth on the 8th of January in the fourth round of the FA Cup. They then lost away at Southampton on the 11th of January. In the first leg of that League Cup, the game I mentioned, the game of Coutinho came back. There was then a decent 1-1 draw with Man United on the 15th of January. Again, though, frustrating because they conceded late. Ibrahimovic scoring 6 minutes to go. Then they beat Plymouth away just about in the replay of the FA Cup on the 18th of January. Then a 3-2 defeat at home to Swansea on the 21st of January, where they came back from 2-0 down and still lost. Then they lost in the second leg of the League Cup to Southampton at Anfield 1-0, and then lost to Wolves in the fourth round of the FA Cup 2-1. And there was a bit of respite on the final day of the month where they drew 1-1 with Chelsea. Stick with you, Carl. Two questions here. We'll do it separately. First of all, what was your low moment of the endless low moments in January?
That's a difficult one. possibly needing a replay against Plymouth.
In fairness, that was quite a changed team, though, wasn't it? I wasn't too pissed off with the Plymouth game, actually. I must admit, the first one, the obviously original tie.
To be honest, the Plymouth, it probably wouldn't have been that bad if it hadn't have been on the back of that Sunderland game, because I don't care if that was away. Sunderland were shocking all season long, and we should have won about 15-0, even if the team against Plymouth had played against Sunderland.
Yeah, fair enough.
Do you know what? That January was, it was nuts, though. You know, we had 9 games that month, and they did all just seem to drag on. They really did. Maybe the Swansea after we'd sort of fought to get ourselves back in it. I think probably even Southampton, you could probably make a shout for that, considering the magnitude of the game, and we just didn't get started. So you can take your pick, actually. The whole month was rubbish, so...
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, for me, the two standouts were Swansea and Wolves, which is just kind of pathetic to be desperately scraping around for an equaliser against Wolves at Anfield. Henry, same question to you. What was the moment where you just basically wanted to reach for the nearest gun and put yourself out of your misery?
I think, to be honest, there's two probably again. I think the Sunderland one killed me, because we'd just beaten City and it had given us a huge amount of sort of momentum going into the new year. And I felt that by that point, Chelsea were favourites. But, you know, we were in touch and Klopp had said a few things about, you know, they must be getting pissed off because, you know, they've won 12 games in a row and we're still, you know, not too far behind. And then that Sunderland game is everything about it. I think he probably made too few changes. The players looked knackered. It was Moyes, which made it worse because you just know how much he hates Liverpool. And just that late, was it a late penalty? I think it was. Late Defoe penalty. Just that was a shocker for me, because it just felt it knocked all the stuffing out of us, and it just sort of set us up for the most depressing of months. But then probably same as Carl, really. I was at that Swansea game, and, you know, when Firmino scored that brilliant second to make it 2-2, you know, it felt again like we were going to turn it round, win 3-2 or 4-2, and that was going to kick us on again. And then that Sigurdsson goal was just so deflating. It was depressing. But I think the Wolves one was grim, but I was in a slightly better mood because I watched Conor Randall that day and just realised that if he can play for Liverpool, I think I can.
The Wolves one was almost not the worst one, because you didn't have time to get settled in and think, right, we're going to turn things around today, because by the time you turn the TV on, it, we were already losing.
Yeah. Yeah, 1-0. Richard Stearman scored after a minute. Andres Wiman on 41 minutes. Origi got a late goal on 86 minutes. Well, that's interesting about Sunderland. I mean, you guys obviously massively pissed off. I was obviously annoyed. I was frustrated, but I just thought, possibly the fact that it just comes so soon after the City game, I just thought they were knackered and it was just bad timing. But stick with you, Henry. I mean, why did January go so wrong? I mean, for me, one huge criticism which has to be laid against Jurgen Klopp is not bringing someone in to replace Mane. I mean, you can't replace him like for like, but knowing he was going to the Africa Cup of Nations, knowing you're going to lose that real injection of pace up top, get someone in. I mean, get Markovic back or something. Just get someone who's got a bit of pace. It completely disrupted the team. And maybe generally the lack of signings in January cost us that month.
Yeah, I think so. I think at the time I was quite defensive of Klopp, just because I was very much of the sort of persuasion of trust him. You know, I fully trust him in that, you know, he did well in the summer transfer market, and if he doesn't want to bring someone in, then, you know, I sort of trusted in Sturridge and Origi maybe coming in and doing a job. But without doubt, in hindsight, you know, I think someone had to come in. Certainly, if it wasn't Markovic coming back, then someone of his ilk, you know, that Mane-style player with a bit of speed and trickery out wide with some end product. And, you know, that Mane not being there really hurt the team so much, as it did at times in the final few months, except for the fact we managed to get some positive results without him, without playing well. But, and I think to be honest, it was just the injuries in general. I think obviously Coutinho was still out, and then when he came back, he was nowhere near his sharpest. And it just looked like we had so much football in a small period of time that certain players at that point just looked knackered. And despite, you know, that a good performance on his own against Swansea, I thought Firmino really sort of fell off a cliff around then. He looked leggy. Milner the same. I think Klein, the more it went on. And I just think it all caught up with us probably not having a strong enough squad. And that month in particular, and not helped by the fact that there was a lot of changes being made with youngsters coming in. You know, I don't think it should be forgotten that probably not far off half the games in that month involved a lot of teenagers being played. So we just lost all that rhythm that we had in the sort of autumn months when we knew what the starting 11 was. We just had none of that. And we had Firmino being pushed out to the left wing and certain players not playing well and tiredness and injuries. I think it was a mix of everything, but you're absolutely right. I think at least one addition needed to be made just to freshen some things up and give us a bit of a boost.
Yeah, just to go back to that Wolves game, Conor Randall went off at half time for Coutinho. I didn't actually watch the game. I was out that afternoon, but I presume he went off because, as Henry said, he was crap. Was he?
I think I did like the player ratings that day, and I think he got a two. I don't think I've ever done that, and so that he was grim. I don't want to be overly harsh on him.
Yeah, I think we should point out we were 2-0 down at home to Wolves, who are a league below us at half time. It's not completely down to Conor Randall.
No, absolutely
that
not.
Bad. No, but,
well, you know. Moreno played in that game as well, so that explains it. So as I said, Liverpool ended January, horrible month, with a 1-1 draw at home to Chelsea. Encouraging result. Again, another good performance against the top six. They then started February in terrible form again. A terrible way. They lost 2-0 at Hull. Really poor performance. But then the rest of February and going into March was sort of mixed but decent as well. It was a good win against Tottenham at Anfield. That was followed by a really poor defeat at Leicester. But then it was followed by a very good win against Arsenal. A gritty, gutsy win against Burnley. A 1-1 draw at Man City, which arguably was a game of the season. I thought it was a fantastic game. Real kind of high quality, just mental game. But also possibly included the miss of the season via Adam Lallana. And then first game of April, first day of April, Liverpool 3, Everton 1, another fantastic derby day. And let's talk about him. There's two players in this game who I thought played very well. Lucas Leiva, Divock Origi. Let's talk about Lucas first. 10 years at Anfield. He's got 1 year left. Start with you, Carl. I think all three of us contributed to a piece, didn't we, for This Is Anfield about Lucas. I said...
You did.
I think he should go. I think Henry said he should stay. I think, were you a goer? Did you think his time is up?
I said it doesn't really matter, that I have nothing at all against him staying because he's no longer a first team player. There's no great reliance on him to play sort of 30 games a season. So if he moves on, it's okay. But if he stays, it's not a case of we're not upgrading the team. You know, he's a good presence. He's someone who's been around the club for a long time. And he does come in and play well sometimes when he's in midfield. So it's not a problem if he stays. Whereas, let's say 5 years ago or whatever, he didn't go. And not just him, but, you know, Martin Skirtle and Glenn Johnson and whoever else it was. And these were players who had been in the team, been in the 11 for a long time, and we'd been unsuccessful, consistently unsuccessful. But that's no longer the case. You know, he's arguably, third choice in that holding midfield role. So I don't mind if he stays. He's obviously got a good presence in the training ground and he gets on well with people. And a lot of them have said, not just of his professionalism, but when you've got new players coming in and maybe they don't speak English, he's always there to help them, that sort of thing. So it's great to have people like that around. But if he does move on, then so be it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've got absolutely nothing against Lucas. He seems like an absolute top bloke. And I don't mind him hanging around. My just feeling with Lucas is he kind of stinks of Hodgson and late Benitez. I just think he feels like a player of a different era. But Henry, I think your reasoning for keeping Lucas is similar to Carl's, isn't it? It's kind of his presence in around the team, in the dressing room. He's been there, he's done that. He's someone who gets Liverpool, as the saying goes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same as if he goes, I'm not going to be upset, to be honest. And that's nothing against him. I think I've had a bit of a love-hate relationship with him over the years. You know, there are some games when he can frustrate the hell out of you, and then he comes in and, you know, plays an absolute blinder from nowhere. So he's been a great servant on the whole. And I think, you know, if he stays, it's not going to do any harm. But like Carl says, he should be nowhere near the first team for me. But it's just being a presence in the dressing room. Someone who's been there for that long knows. I always get the impression with Lucas, he just knows what playing for Liverpool means, the sort of magnitude of it. And he just gets it. He gets the club. So I wouldn't be upset either way, to be honest. But I think, you know, maybe that sort of presence that Kolo Touré had maybe in 2013-14 when he didn't play much. He probably played more than I think, but he didn't play a huge amount, and he'd come in now and again and do a job, apart from unless he was gifting a goal to West Brom. I think Lucas could, you know, be that sort of player who, if you suddenly have a load of injuries or you've got a League Cup game and you want to rest players, then he comes in. But I'm very much sort of a bit on the fence with him. If he goes, then I won't lose any sleep, and if he stays, the same, really.
Lucas was 16th in our squad this season for minutes played, which is, you know, pretty much that role, exactly as you're saying. You know, he'll come in, he'll fill in for two or three games when you need him to, but he's not going to be a first 11 player, and he's just there to support, really.
The thing I find remarkable about Lucas, he's only 30. I was absolutely convinced he was like 34 at least.
I know.
He's only 30. Well, yeah, I guess he obviously came when he was quite young. Yes, and so the other guy who we want to talk about in the context of the Everton game is the man who got the third goal in that 3-1 game against Everton Anfield on the 1st of April, Divock Origi. Henry, you mentioned him a bit earlier. I know you're not a fan. I know you tweet quite a lot about Origi, about your dislike of him. I think I must be in a massive minority. I really quite like Divock Origi. He's got 11 goals this season. I think he's done all right. There was a game at the West Brom away game on Easter Sunday, I think it was, which for me sort of summed him up, where he didn't score. Don't think he had any particularly good chances, but I just thought he held the ball up well. He worked the channels really well. He was an outlet. And as I said, 11 goals, I think pretty decent for someone who's not a regular in the team. But as I said, you're not a fan, are you?
No, I'm not a fan. It'd be sort of going too far to say, you know, I really dislike him, because I think to be honest, I don't think you are in the minority, judging by a lot of what people respond to some of my tweets say. I think there's plenty out there who rate him highly, to be fair. So it might be me that's more in the minority, but he just frustrates the life out of me, because I watch him and I look at him and think he's got potentially everything there to be such a good player. Like, he can be such a dominant striker. He's big, he's strong, he's got pace, he's got a good touch when he wants to, and he can finish. But he just, for me, doesn't seem to do it consistently enough. And I know he's young, but I think, you know, even at 22, I think you can pinpoint plenty of strikers who at that age were, you know, a lot more consistent. And he just, there are too many games for me when he fails to hold the ball up, his movement's lacking. I think he just plays with a general sort of lack of intelligence. And like I touched upon earlier, I think whenever he played, Liverpool's attack just felt a lot more blunt and it didn't feel as fluent. And to be fair to him, you know, this time last year, I probably thought a lot more highly of him because he, you know, he played really well twice against Dortmund and he showed plenty of glimpses, but he frustrates me. I don't think it helps that there's a lad that I play football with on a Thursday night and he's just identical to him in style. And literally I just can't deal playing with him because he's just incapable of getting rid of the ball early and making the right runs. But I'm probably too harsh on him, to be fair. And there's undoubted potential there. But I think probably more than any other player, he's the one that I find most frustrating to watch.
Oh, I'll tell you what, don't get me started on Thursday night footballers. Honestly, I could rant about Alan and Matty all night. I won't go into it now. They're absolutely driving me to distraction.
I reckon if Henry's mate was told you play like Divock Origi, he'd be absolutely delighted.
probably right, to be fair.
I would take Conor Randall, to be honest. I would be delighted to be described as Conor Randall. Yeah, Carl, same question to you. I mean, as Henry said, Divock, he is only 22, very young. Where are you with him?
In the camp of, I think he's got a lot more to offer, but like Henry, the inconsistency in his game is very, very frustrating. And if there was a big bid for him this summer, I'd be taking it. I mean, I'm not talking like, you know, what we paid for him or anything, but if someone was there ready to say like 20 million, then yeah, I'm going to go for that. He, last season when he suddenly came back into the team and he was bigger, he was stronger, he suddenly played with an awful lot more purpose. All of a sudden, he looked the real deal. And I think we've probably seen that about twice this season, and that's a problem. Yeah, he is still reasonably young, but if you're a striker who has their game based on power and running behind defences and a one-on-one ability and then obviously finishing as well, scoring goals, by the age of 22, you've probably already exploded a bit. And we haven't really seen that from him. And I'm not going to say it's a massive, massive concern, but I do wonder where his ceiling is. I don't think he's ever going to be an elite forward, as, let's say, Sturridge was in that season or even a rung below that. He's still got time to do so, but I just don't see enough in his game all the time. Two goals, the one he scored against Everton in this match we're talking about and the one much earlier on in the season against Bournemouth where we lost 4-3. Those goals, those finishes were absolutely ridiculous, of a very, very high level.
The Bournemouth goal was fantastic. It was completely forgotten because of the result. But it was, you know, it's up there with Benteke's goal against Man United and Quattes' goal against QPR. Great forgotten goals.
Yeah, they were great. And if he could do that, I'm not talking about every game, but if he did that more regularly, then that's a different matter. But to not really have a big impact in the final third, either in the build-up play or in getting chances away at the end of moves, that is a problem, especially when we've played just one up front or, you know, two in from out, but who have to run behind a little bit more than he does. I just don't see it unless we play two up front more often and he gets a run of like 20 games and suddenly discovers a lot more self-confidence.
I think for me, if I could just butt in quickly.
Yeah, Cass, of course, just, absolutely.
I think
this
one moment, the moment that I sort of found most worrying, it's the moment I can pinpoint in the season, which is there's a moment, admittedly, the game's dead, so you can use that as an excuse, but away to West Ham, and he went charging through 2-on-1, and Sturridge was just in acres on his own for a tap-in. He just had to slide it across, and he never looked up once, and he took a tame shot straight at the keeper, and you saw, you know, Sturridge was not amused, and it's that lack of awareness that worries me, that I don't think you can coach necessarily. You just get it with some, you see it in some players, they just don't have that intelligence to look up, and it's sort of a selfishness, and it's moments like that that sort of leave me tearing my hair out, and I could see him doing that at 25, 28, 31. He's just got that aspect of his game that I find sort of so frustrating.
Yeah, well, he might have immediate competition for his place. Liverpool have signed Dominic Solanke this week from Chelsea. Well, he's ran on his contract from Chelsea and he will sign on July the 1st, and he's 19 and highly rated. So, yeah, he could already have his position under threat. But, let's carry on with the season. So, yeah, really good win against Everton on April the 1st. And then, as is typical of Liverpool, they followed it up straight away with a really disappointing result. 2-2 draw with Bournemouth the following Wednesday. They were 2-1 up with 3 minutes to go. Josh King got an equaliser. And, Carl, I'll come back to you. There's a little run of these really frustrating games at Anfield. After the Bournemouth game, the next game at Anfield was Southampton. Crystal Palace on the 23rd of April, which Liverpool lost. And, of course, Christian Benteke scored twice for them. And then on the 7th of May, a 0-0 draw with Southampton, the fourth game against them where we didn't score, as I mentioned at the start. James Milner missed a penalty. And at that stage, you're starting to worry about that top four place. Liverpool dropping so many points at home. Those three games, was there a common reason why Liverpool didn't win any of them, or just different reasons why they stumbled so badly?
I think there were different reasons, really. I mean, the Southampton one was because we couldn't find a way to learn. We knew exactly how they were going to play, and they did play that way because it had brought them success, or relative success, in the three matches beforehand, and they did exactly the same. We fell into the same trap, and we couldn't score a goal. You know, if you miss a penalty, you can't really legislate for that during the match, but there was very, very, very few real chances for Liverpool aside from that against Southampton. Crystal Palace, I went into that game thinking that that's the game that I didn't watch. I was on a plane on my way over to Australia, so I missed that game. And I came off the plane and assumed that we were going to win that game, because why wouldn't we? You know, with the prizes on offer, and it was at home, and I thought Palace might try and be a bit more expansive. And I was really shocked by that one. Whereas against Bournemouth, just that type of silly defensive habit that we have of not picking people up, of letting second balls bounce in the area, of giving penalties away, of all these things which have happened throughout the season, I kind of got the idea that that was going to happen in one of those games anyway. And Southampton, like I say, we just didn't learn from what we had already faced against that team. So I'm not too bothered about it when these things happen in isolation. You know, January is a bit different because it was one after another, after another, after another, and there was no way out of that black hole. But you're not going to win every game during the course of a season, home or away. The idea is to learn as you go on what teams are going to do against you and try and improve that and find different ways of getting around it. And Southampton was the most frustrating because we had so many opportunities to do so and we never found a way past them once.
Indeed. And as I said, Milner missed a penalty in the second half. But around those games, Liverpool's away form was excellent. After the Bournemouth game, they won 2-1 at Stoke, came from behind, and Coutinho and Firmino's won the game. Firmino's goal was fantastic. There was then a 1-0 win, as I mentioned, against West Brom on Easter Sunday. After the Palace game, then it was a 1-0 win at Watford. And then the final away game of the season, 4-0 at West Ham. Just go back to the Watford game, Henry. Obviously, most notable for Emre Can's goal. We are going to do goal of the season at the end, so you may mention it in there. Can, yet to sign a new contract with Liverpool, which puts a little bit of doubt whether he's going to stay. Are you too fussed? Is he someone you're too bothered about keeping?
No, I would like to keep him. I think earlier in the season, I probably was one who jumped on the sort of Chan hating bandwagon a little bit, because I think he was so disappointing for a run against, certainly for a month or two. I thought his level was so poor. I mean, it's, as it turns out, by all accounts, he was playing with an injury, to be fair to him. But there was sort of, certainly around the time of that, I thought he was horrendous in that defeat at Hull. And he was just frustrating me. And I think probably partly because it didn't help that I'm a Henderson fan and he's just got injured and Chan had come in and he just wasn't sort of filling the void. But to be fair to him, I think the last couple of months of the season, I think he was arguably Liverpool's best player in that time. And, you know, there's a lot of potential there with him. And he is still... He can frustrate. He's a little bit raw still, a little bit inconsistent. But I think it would be a needless risk getting rid of him unless a huge bid came Liverpool's way. I just think there's too much potential there with him. He you know, is it 23? I think he still only is, which I think it's easy to forget. And he's got the all-round game there to sort of, I think, eventually dominate a Liverpool midfield, I think. So, you know, looking ahead, he's not someone that I definitely see as a guaranteed starter next season, maybe in time, but he's someone who has shown in the last couple of months that when he's fully fit and playing with a bit of confidence that he's well worth sort of persevering with. And I think Klopp's a big admirer, so I'd be surprised if he went anywhere soon.
Yeah, he is 23. And I was just thinking, Carl, he's had a really funny Liverpool career, isn't he? He came in the summer of 2014. He played part of that back three under Rodgers. He then played right back. He was obviously at right back in that 6-1 defeat to Stoke at the end of 14-15. He was then sort of quite good last season. Then he sort of, as Henry said, started this season slowly, then had quite a good end. He's, as I said, arguably scored the goal of the season. I mean, he's crammed a lot in, hasn't he, in 3 years at Liverpool?
Yeah, he's a busy little player, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think it's important that we do keep him. Whether it's wages or whatever the story is, he wants to be part of the first team. The only way he's going to do that, the only way he's going to earn the right for that is to play well more consistently. And I think Henry's right. At the end of the season, he was one of our best players. And when you consider not just the consistency in Emre Can's game, but how much he's relied on to perform, how regularly he's relied on to perform, and how often he is chosen ahead of other players in midfield at age 23, compared to exactly the same for Origi at age 22, I think there's a vast difference in the two players and also in how much we need to emphasise keeping one over the other. And I know it's not like, you know, we either keep Chan or Origi, but if you're going to put faith in Origi and say that, yeah, but he could be an awful lot better, well, I think you've got to go double that for Emre Can right now. And considering some of the reported wages, let's say, over the last few days that we're going to be paying new signings, I think Emre Can is worth keeping hold of.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. And another player I think we definitely need to keep hold of is Philippe Coutinho. In that West Ham game, as I said, the last away game of the season, West Ham 0-Liverpool 4, he scored twice. He was absolutely sensational, playing the diamond part of the midfield diamond, which he'd obviously done quite a lot in 13-14. Henry, come to you on this one. I was relatively relaxed about Coutinho leaving this summer for most of the season. Obviously, I think he's great. I want him to stay, but I wasn't having the same kind of palpitations I was having over the likes of Alonso and Mascherano and Suarez and Sterling to an extent. But after that game, I know it was only West Ham, but I decided Liverpool absolutely must keep him. They must rebuff any bid from Barcelona. I presume, obviously, you're a fan as well. He's a must stay, isn't he?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, at the end of the day, if you want to achieve success, you've got to keep your best players, and he's exactly that. I mean, everyone has their favourite or whoever they think's the best Liverpool player, but you know, he's obviously in that top two or three, and in most people's minds, you know, he's our best player. So, you know, it's critical we keep him. And I think I was the same as you. There was a point when I wasn't that upset about the thought of him leaving for Barcelona. I'm not entirely sure why, because I think he's one of these players that, just when you're starting to doubt him a little bit, he comes back, and that West Ham game, he just shows how brilliant he is, and the cameo when he came on at Stoke and things like that. And I think the problem with him, I think I'm almost a bit like an overly critical dad with him, sort of watching his son, is that like, I know how good he is. I know how talented he is, but there are times when you watch him and he's on the periphery of things and he can't quite get into the game, and his sort of demeanour drops, his head drops a bit, and he looks a little bit disinterested. And it's maybe being a bit harsh, but I think, you know, he's so good. And, you know, 4 years he's been at Liverpool, and there's been so many times that he's bailed us out at key moments, and, you know, provided that pass for Sturridge against West Ham. You know, that was a game that I was, and I think most Liverpool fans were terrified about. And, you know, he played such a key role in us breaking the deadlock, and then obviously got two more goals later. And that just proved how much of a talisman he's become. So obviously got to keep hold of him. And at 24, you know, he should still have his peak years ahead, which I hope for Liverpool.
Yeah, Carl, in terms of pure numbers, this has been his best season at Liverpool. He's got 13 goals in the league, one in the League Cup, 7 assists as well. So he's quite frightening to think he's getting better, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I mean, that was always going to happen. He's got the chance now to step up even more next year because he's going to be in the Champions League. And his experience there is minimal so far, which is a bit of a problem with a lot of the attacking part of the squad, to be honest. But Coutinho in particular, I'm not on the side of the fence that you two are. I've always said that he has to be central to our plans and we should be building the team around him.
Do you think he should literally be central? I mean, in that
very specifically central.
Yeah, I agree with that. Back into midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. When we played 4-2-3-1, I wanted him as the 10. When we played the 4-3-3, I wanted him as a centre midfield. And if we stick with the diamond, I'm happy with him to be one of the number 8. That's where he was most exciting and most expressive for us under Rodgers when we were so good for a little while. You know, he has more space to play in then. He is able to turn quicker on the ball after we've won possession. And most importantly of all, there are runners ahead of him there.
Yeah.
You say he's got like, what was it, 13 and 7. If he plays in midfield, he'll still score a lot of goals because he'll cut in and he'll shoot and he loves to shoot. But with more players ahead of him and a lot more movement, he will play an awful lot of those more passes between the defence like he did for Sturridge against West Ham. He should get a lot more assists than he does. But because when he's playing on the left-hand side or, you know, for a few games under Rodgers, he actually played as the centre forward when Sterling wasn't. If you've not got that movement around and beyond him, I just don't think you get that best out of Coutinho's traits. And he is the best player Liverpool have. You know, Mane is very, very important because of his pace and his difference to the rest of the players. But in simple best terms, it's Coutinho. And nobody should really be signed unless they can help get the best out of Coutinho. Not that we should be entirely reliant on him, but everything should be concerned with getting more and more and more out of him. The better he plays, the better it is for Liverpool. And if he eventually moves on, you get more money for him then anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Henry, sounds like you're agreeing with that idea of dropping him back a bit further, playing in midfield.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I just basically reiterate everything that Carl said. I think you just want him more involved. And I sort of almost look at it a bit like it's the equivalent of shoving, you know, Iniesta out on the left wing, you know, compared to playing. And, you know, he can obviously do a job there because he's so brilliant. But
Which he did for quite a long time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Coutinho will excel at times out on the left, as he's shown. But that West Ham game just showed, and 2013-14, you know, people do forget that he played centrally a lot more. And, you know, he's sort of the hub of the team there. And so much happens, that creativity there. And Carl says, you know, you've got runners in front of him. That's huge. And it just proved it perfectly with the run Sturridge made. He just picked him out, inch perfect pass. And he'd do that for fun if he's working his magic in that central area. So without a doubt, you know, it doesn't mean, you know, never play him on the left, but predominantly, I think that's where he should be used moving forward.
Yeah, I'll stick with you, Henry. I didn't put this guy on the agenda, but I do actually want to talk to him because I know you love him so much. Simon Mignolet, slightly worryingly, I would suggest he's had a really good end to the season. I think Paul Tompkins wrote a piece where he said he's actually had the best season of any goalkeeper since 2011 in terms of catches and punches under pressure, which is pretty remarkable given how poor he was in that area. I mean, where are we now with Mignolet? Would you be okay with him being Liverpool's number one at the start of next season?
Yeah, I think I think you have to give huge credit where it's due because he's taken a lot of stick. And I think these last 2 or 3 months, he's shown a lot of character. And to be fair, he's shown that he's probably a better goalkeeper than I've given him credit for. He's come across as just so much more confident and decisive in his decision making, you know, and my big criticism before was that, you know, he didn't used to bang on about him being a great shot stopper, but the amount of times you know, opposition players would go clean through against him, and you just knew they'd score. And he's changed that now. You know, he made a couple of big saves at Stoke. I think it was Charlie Adam and Berahino, I think. And a big one from, I can't remember who it was, but West Brom. He made Matt a big Phillips. Save. Yeah, that's the one. And you know, like you say, with those stats, every time a cross has been launched in, a corner's come in, I haven't felt as terrified that he's going to miss a punch or, you know, be hesitant in his decision making. So I have to sort of say that I'll be happy. Maybe it's a bit premature and I'm being a bit knee jerk with changing my opinion. But I think going into next season, you have to stick with him as number one, because he's proved himself now over a longer period of time. And he's 29 now, which for a goalkeeper is nothing. And you could argue that maybe this newfound confidence that he might just be maybe coming into his best years. You know, I'm still not 100% convinced by any means, but I think he's done enough to show that he merits being number one next season.
I mean, Carl, you're going on holiday with John Achtenberg in the summer, obviously, as we heard earlier. So you can chat with him and discuss what's gone so well with Mignolet. But like Henry, would you be okay with him being our number one start next season?
Well, I think Henry's yes was probably the most reluctant agreement I've ever heard.
You're absolutely right.
We should just say to anyone who might miss the subtlety of this, Henry absolutely hates Simon Mignolet, which I think he shares with me. We did a pod, I remember, in January. I actually listened to this back this morning because I just wanted to check how much he hated him. We did it after he signed his five-year contract in January last year, January 2016, and you were on the verge of tears. That's how much you
loved. I really was.
Yeah. Well, now you know how Arsenal fans feel this week.
Absolutely, yeah.
Look, Mignolet, I wrote a review, an end-of-season review for him, and I said a bit in there, which I think is probably true. He has such a bad reputation from his entire time at Liverpool, from, you know, people didn't want him when he first came in, from the times when he's been dropped for Brad Jones, Loris Karius, all the rest of it.
Bogdan, that was
a particular though.
God.
He has to prove himself every time he takes to the pitch, basically, and it's a battle which is ongoing, and even though he hasn't lost, it doesn't feel like he's won either, because there is still this question over him, you know. Let's take Sturridge, for example. Everybody 2 months ago said, no, he's gone. The end of the season, he's gone. Two games at the end of the season, he played well and he was important in. And all of a sudden, people are like, yeah, we've got to keep him. You know, he's got to stay now. Obviously, he's proven what he can do again. Mignolet has just had like three really good months. He was one of our best and most important players to come in the top four. And there's a question over whether he will be number one or not next season. And I think he's going to have that always, no matter if he's number one all year next year, the year after, if Karius goes out on loan next season, anything. It's just the reputation that he's got among Liverpool fans now.
But hasn't he brought that on himself by the fact that, I mean, he's been here since 2013. So what's he had? Four seasons now, if
I'm not saying
he hasn't had one good season, has he? One full
not
season
all the way
gone.
Through.
Exactly. No. He's been dropped in every season. Well, apart from the 13-14, he's been dropped in every season. That's pretty damning for a goalkeeper, isn't it?
Well, you know, where did you draw the line? I mean, what do you expect of a goalkeeper? I mean, firstly, would you or any Liverpool fan take Mignolet over all of Courtois, De Gea, Hugo Lloris, Claudio Bravo, whoever else? Would any Liverpool fan take him over all of the other five?
I'd take him over Bravo, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, what about Churchill?
Not the rest.
Not the rest. No, the rest are mine.
All right.
Better,
well, if we're trying to not just break somewhere into that top six, not just into the top four, but go for the title, and we're talking about a goalkeeper who you would have at least five of our rivals over, then it's a problem, you know?
Yeah.
And the other side of that is that Mignolet knows that. He probably knows what the fans have thought of him all along, and it's a lot of pressure to take, and every time he makes a mistake, people are going to go on him again. But if you look at the very elite end of goalkeeping, Manuel Neuer, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, Gigi Buffon, all of them have made goalkeeping errors this season, which have cost their team goals. Every single one of them. And the same for centre-backs. You know, the world we live in now of social media and every goal being available 15 seconds after it goes in the back of the net, everything's scrutinised. There's clips of everything. It's replayed and there's memes over everybody. As soon as you make a mistake, your fans think that you're the only one who does that. Right? And they don't pay attention. Yeah. You know, people don't watch 20 games of the Eredivisie and 50 games of La Liga and 100 games of the Bundesliga every single season. But this happens everywhere. And it's not the case that if we spend 40 million and, I don't know, let's say somehow we manage to get Courtois, yeah, he's made mistakes. Chelsea have conceded goals that he's dropped in. They've just sold Asmir Begovic, who has one of the most ridiculously overrated reputations in the Premier League, because that man drops so many easy saves. I don't know how he got the reputation that he has. It's undeserved. And I think if he's first choice again next season, people will discover that again and probably come up with the excuse of, oh, well, he didn't play football for a couple of years at Chelsea. So it's got nothing to do with it. He's always been that way. Mignolet suffers from that because people just expect him or anybody else that we have to be perfect, and it's never going to be the case.
It's a fair point.
Yeah, you've convinced me. Now, in all seriousness, I was sort of coming around to both of your ways, thinking, you know, which is, he's had such a good season that I was willing to give him benefit of doubt. But excellent. Well, let's move on.
Harrier should be number one.
Oh, you still think Harrier should be number one next season?
I think he'll start number one. Yeah.
Oh, you think he will? Or you, yeah. What, you want him to be? You want him to give him a chance, or you think?
No. I think Mignolet deserves to start number one. Yeah. I think he's literally going to be back to square one with the fans, with Klopp, with everything, and a couple of games, season, pre-season. I think Harrier will be back in goal again.
Yeah, certainly could be the case. Indeed. Well, that is for the future. So, yes, let's just wrap up this season. So, yes, after the West Ham game came the Middlesbrough game on the 21st of May. Liverpool 3, Middlesbrough 0, as we've already discussed, which guaranteed Liverpool a top four place. Back to you, Henry. I mean, just going through the games, we've actually gone through them pretty quickly. Liverpool didn't play an enormous number of games this season, certainly compared to last year. Given a lack of football, should we have mounted a title challenge this season?
It's a tricky one because it's a bit of a major cop out of this, but I think it was out of their hands in the end, because for me, if they were going to mount a challenge because of the lack of squad depth, I think they had to keep a sort of 13, 14 players fit for the majority of the season, like Chelsea did. And I think then, you know, at that point in November when they were flying, if they'd all stayed fit, I think they would have mounted a challenge. So I think there's a reasonable excuse there for Klopp to use that, you know, we had to make do for fair chunks without the likes of Coutinho, Lallana. Mane was obviously away and injured. Matip missed a lot. And probably missed, you know, Sturridge was once again out. Henderson, Chan missed a bit. You know, there was always spells. I can't remember the last time Liverpool had a game when you would say probably their first choice midfield and attack all played. So I would use that as an excuse. And I think at the end of the day, they went into the season as sixth favourites. And top four was always the aim. Not, you don't want to celebrate fourth place with, you know, a club of Liverpool stature, but it was. So I think, to be fair, I think saying they should have challenged for the title, had they stayed fit, then I think it would be more fair to say that. But I think things worked against them. Fair play to Chelsea for winning the title. It was richly deserved. But I think if you reversed the fortunes in terms of fitness, I think things would have been very different personally. So, yeah, I mean, I'm fence sitting a little bit. I'm going to say with what happened to them in terms of injuries, that it's no, there should be no shame in them not challenging for the title. And I firmly believe they would have done if things had been a bit different.
Yeah, I think Mane stayed in January might have made a massive difference. But anyway, we will never know for sure. Excellent. I'm going to let Henry and Carl get back to their lives. They've been fantastic so far. I'm going to ask one more thing from them, which is some awards, some end of season awards. So I've got five categories here. We'll go through them relatively quickly. I'll start with you, Carl, player of the season.
Sadio Mane.
Yep. Henry, you're going
to... Yeah, agree on that. Yeah.
Clean sweep for me. Absolutely, Mane, player of the season. Most improved player. Henry, come to you first.
I've struggled a bit with this, actually. Gut feeling, I went with Lallana, even though he dipped a bit in the second half, but I thought he went up another gear in the first half. And if not him, then probably Alexander-Arnold.
Okay. Carl, your choice for most improved player?
Yeah, I think if you look from last season to this season just finished, I think Lallana's the one with the biggest difference there. So definitely him.
Yeah, I would go with that. Well, obviously, Mignolet's a decent shout as well, but now I'd go with Lallana as well. Most disappointing player, Carl, I'll stick with you.
I went for Henderson on that because I think it is disappointing that he's continued to miss so much of the season that he has been injured and there's not really any sign of him coming back when we've needed him to.
Mm. Okay, Henry, same to you. Most disappointing player?
Origi, unsurprisingly. but I thought second half of the season, I thought Klein was poor.
Yeah, I was going to suggest Carl, because Klein, yeah, because you would, I think, was he your player of the season last year?
He had a bit of a drop off, wasn't he? Yeah, which I'd forgotten. But I thought his end product in the final third was really disappointing. So, yeah, expected more from him.
Okay. Game of the season. Stick with you, Henry.
It's got to be Arsenal, I think, but the Man City one was pretty epic as well, but we obviously didn't win, so Arsenal for me on the opening day.
Yeah, I'm actually going to say Man City. I thought it was an absolutely brilliant game, and it could have ended all sorts.
For the sheer needle of it all, obviously the Everton game with the Spurs goal.
Yes, well, we'll come on to that because that might fall into your final category. Yeah, Carl. game of the season.
I'd go for either Tottenham or Arsenal at home, in quite close to each other there. I thought we played really well, and against big teams who we were fighting against, they were big points for us.
Indeed. Okay. Now I'll combine this one, but you can separate them out if you want. No problems at all. Moment stroke goal of the season. So it can be the same, or if you want to pick a separate moment to a goal, that's absolutely fine. Stick with you, Carl.
Goal of the season has to be Emre Can. We've got quite a few ones. I think Firmino against Stoke and Henderson against Chelsea were both good, but definitely Emre Can. Moment though is Wijnaldum. That was such a relief and such a big step towards what we needed. So that's got to be the moment.
Very good choice. Yeah, I think that's probably my moment of the season as well. And Henry, same to you. You can split them if you want, or have them as the same one.
It's got to be Chan's, but like Carl said, Firmino against Stoke. I thought Mane's against Arsenal on the opening day was pretty special as well. In terms of a moment, I'm going to go a bit rogue and just say whoever it was against, Karius's goal kick that went off.
West Ham in December.
It's got to be that, I think.
Yeah.
The Iago Aspas Award.
Aspas, who now is absolutely brilliant. He's not been reinvented. I guess he was brilliant before he came, and he's brilliant after. He was just not very good for us. Excellent, very good. Well, I didn't think we'd end this podcast talking about Iago Aspas, but that's where it's taken us. Henry, Carl, thank you very much. Brilliant review of the season. So yes, Liverpool's 2016-2017 season is over. They finished fourth in the league, which is pretty decent, and we'll go into a Champions League qualifier in August. So yes, that is probably the last runner until pre-season kicks off in July. I may try and squeeze one more in, but likely to have a bit of a summer break. Thank you for listening this season. Thank you for all the guests who've come on, including Carl and Henry, who've been on multiple times and been great. So yes, enjoy your summer, and we'll touch base again, as I said, probably in July, maybe do one more before, but if not, enjoy your summer, and as ever, up the Reds.